FM. We would like to acknowledge that we are humbly speaking today on the unceded ancestral territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, Coast Salish, and Squamish peoples. This land that we recorded on a couple weeks ago belonged to the Lillooet and Squamish territories, Whistler, BC. It's actually quite an interesting history and contested area. Check out the Squamish Lillooet Cultural Center if you're ever in town to find out more. Welcome to Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. Our guest today, Derek Foose, comes to us from the Whistler Freeride Club, and now heavily associated with the Freeride World Tour. Derek has quite the history on the Big Hills. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from?
Hi. I grew up in Edmonton, in Alberta. I grew up ski racing, and I went to university at the U of A for a year, and then figured I would just come to Whistler to see what it was like. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, probably within a week, was fairly certain I was never going back to Edmonton. So I've been out here since the mid-90s. Whistler's home now, for sure. And yeah, it's been quite a ride in the free ride world, just seeing it go from kind of inception to where it's at now. It's cool.
Big time. And do you feel like Whistler offers anything in particular to the free ride community? Like, obviously a ton of riders now in the junior circuit are coming straight from here, straight from the club. What is it about Whistler?
Oh, from your perspective? It's unique, the terrain, the snow, and the people. I think the combination of those three things are what makes it what it is. And it's not the only place in North America with big terrain. It's not the only place with great snow, and certainly not the only place with awesome people. But it's just a combination of it. The Coast Mountain's pretty snow safe in terms of, like, regular snowfall. I mean, right. This time this year, we're maybe seeing a bit of a change in things, but even now while we do this, it's snowing outside.
And it sure is.
It feels like it's coming.
Yeah.
Big terrain. The lift access terrain on Whistler and Blackcomb is insane. Like, that was the thing that kind of pulled me here from, like, as a kid, and definitely what's kept me.
How do you feel like the Whistler culture influences the kids you coach in freeride?
Oh, well, I think a lot of what we see with the kids can be really attributed to their parents. There's a love and a passion for the mountains. A lot of the kids that we work with, are their parents have a similar story to me. They moved here because they were in love with skiing or the mountains or whatever, and kind of came of age here and then stayed. And it really felt like, at the time that I arrived, there weren't so many people that had been here for a long time. But really, from that, like, mid-90s, mm-hmm. way more people started locking down and putting down roots and actually sticking it out. And a lot of those people have families now. Obviously, we also have a huge chunk of our club population coming from Vancouver, from Squamish, from mm-hmm. Pemberton.
It's a place to be.
Kind of. It feels like it's a bit of a hub right now.
Totally.
And a real center for young talent, which is cool. It's so fun to be a part of that.
No doubt. Is seeing kind of that talent back, was it 2001?
Yeah.
The club? Was it seeing that talent kind of going unseen that inspired you to make the club here?
A little bit, yeah. Part of it was, so I was coaching young kid ski racing.
Okay.
And there were a couple of things. First of all, I would get in trouble all the time because I'd be up on the peak chair with my group, and they'd be like, well, we're supposed to be doing slalom training or scraping the snow off the race course. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't.
That slipped my mind.
that was kind of part of the impetus. And then the other thing was, a lot of the kids, after they passed through the age group that I was coaching, mm-hmm. ski racing was intense at that time. Gates, super focused really early. And a lot of these kids were burning out at around 14 and then quitting skiing. Not quitting racing, but quitting skiing altogether. And I looked at that as somebody who was still, like, stars in my eyes in Whistler, like, I can't believe I'm here. And I thought that was crazy, like, to have grown up here, to have that skill set, and hate skiing was insane to me. So I was looking for kind of an outlet for some of those kids where their parents still wanted them in something a little bit structured, mm-hmm. with a, you know, quotes, adult supervision. Yeah. and the kids were getting something that they could really rally totally. Behind and, right. and fall in love with. So that was it for me.
Yeah. So the structure of the club, what does that look like? I know it's on the weekends. Do most of your kids come Saturday, Sunday, or is it one day?
The bulk of it is Saturday, Sunday. Yeah. We do offer single-day programming for kids 13 and up,
okay.
who are involved in other sports. You know, if you're a wizard at hockey or soccer or something mm-hmm. like that and on that track, we don't want to take away from that.
Yeah.
You know, athletes are better the more stuff they do, the more diverse their
right.
their sort of you know, applications are. So I don't want to take away from that at all. But the 2 day a week is definitely like the trunk of the tree.
Right.
And yeah, so it's 2 days a week from the beginning of December till about mid-April,
mm-hmm.
With a couple blocks of camps during the Christmas holidays and at spring break.
Okay,
so
cool.
It's a lot of time on snow. So I think yeah. it's 47 days in total.
Right.
With coaching, with direction. So the kids they're skiing a lot. There's some skill development,
mm-hmm.
And our huge, huge focus is just making it fun for the kids. Like the way right. that I kind of, when I get new coaches on, I tell them that like a teenager's most valuable currency is their free time. They
yeah.
don't have a lot of it, right?
Yeah,
so their weekends.
True.
So it's up to us if they're going to give that time to us to make it awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I feel like the kids at the coaches, like everybody's buying into
yeah.
the system.
Yeah.
Partly because it's fun, like for sure the best job I've ever had, and
right.
and the kids love it.
Yeah.
You know, they go home, their parents are stoked because they're falling asleep in their dinner,
mm-hmm.
and they're exhausted, but they're happy. And the connections they make with the other kids on the team and beyond, like on the competition
yeah.
circuit, is just so cool. Like
yeah.
the expanding circles of friends.
That's fantastic. I read there was an interview with David Song in The Peak. I think early last year, and you mentioned that there were a couple returning coaches like who'd ridden with you. That's pretty awesome. Like what do you feel like the role of mentorship is in the club?
Well, it's huge. Yeah, these young adults that grew up in the Free Ride Club
mm-hmm.
are for sure the best ambassadors to,
yeah.
to take it forward because they know exactly what it's supposed to feel like. And and so they can deliver like a free ride day in their sleep. Not that they would,
yeah.
but you know what I mean? Like they totally get it.
Yeah.
And the ones that have the right sort of mentality of, mm-hmm. of, you know, good communication skills, understand the physics of skiing, that passion, because that's a lot of it, is just
mm-hmm.
passing on the fun. Knowing the mountain inside out, you know, what better way to know the mountain like that than having grown up here?
No doubt.
And being shown around by other people who know the mountain really well. So all of those things. And I love it. Like we've got a team at Whitewater right now where it's two of our most experienced coaches and two of our recycled athlete coaches.
Right.
So the four of them all working together,
okay.
At a comp with the current kids, it's unreal. Like
that's
it's
fantastic.
It's so cool to see it coming full circle like that.
So who has the opportunity out of your coaches to travel with the crew?
Most of them.
Okay.
As the competition circuit gets bigger, we're trying to get, you know, as many as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like out on the road with the kids, and the kids all have their favorites, you know.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's kind of as it should be.
Natural.
Yeah, so we've got a group of U12, so 9, 10, 11,
mm-hmm.
then U15, which is 12, 13, 14, and the U19s, which goes up to 18. So most of the older kids are in grade 12. There are some
okay.
kids who stick around for another year after that, especially if they've got, like, real specific competition goals.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of divide that way. And then, depending on how many kids are going from each age group, we'll kind of pull from our coaching roster, try to have like a little bit of experience, but a little bit of sort of new, you know, so we can have some mentoring of
nice.
Coaches at the events.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because kind of in the back of my mind for a lot of this, I'm thinking about succession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to be able to do this forever, as much as I'm going to do it for as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want whenever I go and the other sort of older and more experienced coaches go, that the club fully holds that line of what it is and how it feels and the spirit and culture of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Your passion coming through. Totally. So when you're talking about how the club has developed and freeriding in general, like some of my listeners, though few, may not be familiar with what free ride even is. How would you describe it in a few words?
I would say that there are two aspects. There's the pure free ride, and then there's the competition side.
Mm-hmm.
Both equally important, at least in terms of what we're doing. You know, free riding is like just the purest expression of your fun in the mountains. So big alpine terrain, skiing off piste, you know, dropping cliffs, hitting jumps, and it's the nice thing as that part of it blends into competition, it still holds that kind of root, where in competition, the athletes, they choose wherever they want to go down. They're given a face and it has certain features on it. Some of them are open or closed depending on the age group,
mm-hmm.
And things like that. But essentially, the competition side of it is skiing the most difficult way down you can, but still make it look awesome.
Yeah.
Because you can definitely push yourself over your ability and get into something where you're stopping a lot or you're falling, mm-hmm. or things like that. So they judge, are divided into five categories for judging.
Okay.
So there's a line score, mm-hmm. control, technique, fluidity, and style and energy. And each one of those things is judged on a scale of 1 to 10,
right,
with the line score being the most important.
Okay.
So no other category scores can go more than 3 points above the line, which means if you ski a really weak line right down the middle and don't do anything, mm-hmm. you're not going to score tens in control and fluidity and technique and stuff. So it's all
that
related to
adds up.
To the difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really just finding that balance between something that's hard to do,
yeah.
but you being able to do it really, really well at a high level.
That's interesting. It seems like that line choice might be the most impartial as well.
Yeah, yeah. The line score is line score. It doesn't matter how you do it. What matters, and this is always like an evolution in every athlete,
mm-hmm.
is understanding what your style is.
Yeah.
So you can then select a line that's going to match to that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of different styles of skiing, and that's awesome. And, you know, that's kind of the free and free ride.
Mm-hmm.
But within that, you've got to choose something that's going to work for you. If you're a fall line charging skier and you pick something really technical with a lot of, you know, meandering around, it's
mm-hmm.
it's not going to click, you know,
yeah,
square
really
peg round hole kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, helping the kids kind of dial into what their thing is, their style, and then helping them choose a line that's going to really shine with how they are and,
right.
and what they do. So yeah, it's tricky. And honestly, like most athletes don't really hone in on that until they're like 15, 16.
Right.
It's a lot of trial and error and everybody's trying to figure out what their style is.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies in life.
Life.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I'm finding that out slowly but surely. Yeah. Always in progress.
Yeah, and it can change,
and
that's okay.
Yeah, it seems like the features, you know, they develop as kids get older. It sounds like the skill level is also coming up with the new generations. Do you feel like some features that were totally out of the question in like a U12 category are going to come into play these days?
Yes and no. There's a limit to what little bodies can handle.
Yes.
And the people running the event, there's a technical director and then the event organizers will come together to kind of decide what's going to be open for each age group. And the general philosophy is make them do more with less.
Nice.
Partially because line score is such an important factor. If you put big things in,
mm-hmm.
kids are going to hit them,
mm-hmm.
because they feel that
it's allowed.
Yeah, it's allowed, and then there's a crunch to
almost,
yeah, exactly. And these are teenagers, right? So they're not smart. we're there to help them kind of make good decisions that allow them to return to their parents at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely, I'd say there's a huge increase in skill level across mm-hmm. the board at all age groups. We're not really seeing event operators or organizers open more and bigger stuff for younger kids, because okay. nobody wants to see people no. out there going beyond what their capable
of. Especially 12-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah. And their parents are not really interested in mm-hmm. that. And I think the sport's evolved in a good direction where the judges are really hammering on the control category. Mm-hmm. So if your run isn't clean, mm-hmm. you put a hand down, you backslap, anything like that, you're zapped on your scores.
Right.
Which creates a culture of only doing things that you can really nail. And that's good,
that's really
from a safety perspective.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. That's
yeah, and it promotes consistency yeah. and good decision-making, which yeah. are all things that, even outside of our free ride world, we want these kids to have as mountain people, you know, to
mountain
be able
people.
To yeah, yeah, make good decisions totally. And decisions that are going to get them to the bottom every day safe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge part of it right now.
Yeah, I was thinking about the pillars of free ride that I think the club has. Are
they, yeah, safety, yeah. fun, learning.
There we go. In that order?
In that order.
In that order.
Yeah,
right.
We have a huge responsibility to bring these kids back to their parents, like mm-hmm. I was saying. It's got to be fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that hard to make it fun mm-hmm. because the environment itself is fun and mm-hmm. all the coaches, including me, are really passionate about it. So you can deliver a fun day.
Yeah.
And then they should get something out of it. You know, yeah. there should be a steady improvement and acquisition of skills. And it's not just that. It's like knowledge, terrain mm-hmm. knowledge, weather, all the things that make you like good at being in the mountains. Like every day has a different feel to it. And you may go to this piece of terrain on that day if the wind blew like that, or, you know, all the factors that go into it.
Yeah.
And so helping them kind of learn and understand that along the way is a huge part of it.
Yeah, that's really unique. I feel like that kind of sets the free ride world apart from, you know, something like slalom or GS or whatever it was, that where you're on a manicured course and, you know, there's
it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different. And I don't take anything away from ski racing. I mean, it was my home for a long time as a mm-hmm. kid, and I really enjoyed it, and I wasn't even good at it. I just really liked it. I liked the people that I was with on
going
my team.
Going super fast.
Yeah, and just like meeting all the kids from other teams. All the same, a lot of the same stuff that's cool about free ride was what drew me into that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's for sure it's different because you're not looking at those like weather factors or snow or any of that. I mean, it's you're on the run that you're on and that's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What circuit are the kids on right now?
So it's the IFSA North American Junior Tour.
Okay.
And the series is divided into regions.
Mm-hmm.
And our region is Western Canada.
Okay.
And kids can compete out of region. We'll go down to the Pacific Northwest, like to Western Washington,
nice.
And compete down there a little bit. But the bulk of our competition for our club is in Western Canada.
Okay.
And then at the end of the year, the top sort of 10% of each age division in boys, girls, ski and snowboard get invited to the North American Championships, Junior Championships. Actually, it's the America's Junior Championships now, because South America is involved
for
the first
time.
Yeah, so we've got South American
that's
kids coming.
Great.
So we've changed the name. We've called it NORAMs or North American Championships for a long time.
Not just the AMs.
Yeah, well, we're calling it the Junior Freeride Championships.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so then, you know, those kids that are at that ranking level, that high level, will get invited to that, and that rotates 2 years in the US, 1 year in Canada on a kind of constantly revolving cycle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did the push come from to get South America involved?
Well, there's really two guys, one Argentinian and one Chilean, that have been working so hard to develop a series down there, and they 3 years ago approached us at the IFSA and said, we want to be involved in what you're doing, because they want to learn, they want to help, like, judges get mm-hmm. trained up, they want to help the technical directors get trained, they want to build a club system like we have where kids will get involved and stay involved, because mm-hmm. we really don't have a problem with retention. Once kids are in, they stay in.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's just a testament to a lot of things and a mm-hmm. lot of people's hard work. But yeah, that's where it came from. And, you know, they put on 23 events, junior and adult, our winter.
That's awesome.
And it's growing so fast. And the passion down there, I mean, they're already passionate people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're falling in love head over heels with freeride. And
that's great.
I think we're going to see, you know, not slowly, a very rapid escalation in the skill level, because a lot of their kids are brand new to this. Like, they're not even, a lot of them aren't even great at skiing yet, but it'll come, and it'll come quick because they've got good coaches, passionate people, and awesome terrain.
Okay.
And then, yeah, integrating them into the North American series now with the championship event and stuff, it's cool. It's really cool to see it going that way.
Do you see maybe a resort in South America being incorporated into the circuit in the future?
Well, we're kind of already there. Okay. So the events are kind of ranked or tiered on star levels. So one star being like the entry level, four star at the adult level being the top, and juniors is three.
Okay.
So they're currently running 2 and 3 stars down there. They don't have a 3-star junior event, but our athletes can go down there, can compete, and their results count in our series.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's here. Yeah.
Okay.
And they will grow to where there are 3-star juniors and 4-star adult events, I'd say, in the next, like, in the near future, for sure. It's coming. Because their events are, they're being run really well. The skiing is good. The media they're putting out is unbelievable. Yeah, like, it's really sick to see it just blowing up.
You're also the coach advisory chair for the IFSA.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what you've been referencing a little bit here and there, right? What does that role mean?
Yeah, so that's the governing body for free ride in North and South America. So there's a board of directors kind of divided up by role. And our task is essentially like steering the sport in a direction that our community feels good about. So it's very community driven. There's, you know, I'm the chair of the coaches, or I'm the coach's chair on the board, but then there's a whole coaches committee that I work with that all have input, and from all the different regions of North America, as well as Chile and Argentina. So they're steering my voice on the board. There's the same for judging. There's the same for the TDs. So everybody's kind of got a voice in it. And then as a community, we're trying to just keep the thing moving in a direction that we all feel good about,
right.
And help to manage the growth, because we're seeing, you know, 13% year-on-year increase in athlete numbers, and this year we're in early January and we're already over that. So the growth is fast and big. So trying to just stay on top of that, you know, make sure there's access to events for new athletes, make sure the top tier athletes have a top tier series for them to compete in that they can actually get into, because what we were starting to see is the bigger events would have more kids on the wait list than were actually in the comp. Good problem to have, you know, just to see that, like, explosive growth. But it can't stay like that. That's not sustainable. When half your community can't even get into comps, there's, you know, there needs to be some development and growth.
Do you guys, as coaches, like, are you feeling pressure from these numbers? Is it pressure to, you know, maybe develop, I don't know, like a fifth tier between, like, move the adult up to a fifth tier and then have like a fourth tier that's kind of a mid to junior?
Kind of. I mean, there's a distinct line right now between the kids and the adults. There's a thin gray band at 18 where kids can go either side. You know, you can compete as a junior if you're 18, you can compete as an adult if you're 18. Once you're 19, you're in adult. And then the whole series is the same. 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star at the adult level.
Okay.
And then there's a 3-event championship series for the adults called the Challenger Series. And that qualifies athletes onto the Freeride World Tour.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of a nice pyramid, you know, with a really clearly laid out ladder that both kids and adults can kind of follow.
Yeah.
And a big part of the adult freeride community, and this is getting bigger every year, is the recently graduated juniors. They're popping out of these clubs, going to university, you know, moving on in their lives from junior freeride, but they want to keep that in their lives, or they have this goal of making it to the world tour, and the structure's already there.
Right.
And seeing them come into the adult ranks seasoned, right? They've been competing since they were 12. They know how to do it. They know how to pick a line. Their skills are top notch. They've got like the perfect combo of an adult body but a kid's brain, right? It's ideal for the sport. So we're seeing the, I'd say, the average age at the Challenger Tour and even at the Freeride World Tour has come down a ton in the last 5 years.
Yeah, because I know, is it Andrew Pollard? Yep. He's 28.
Yeah,
still he was kind of at the top of the ranks.
Totally, and he was like the tip of the spear for juniors coming up. He was in the early times of junior freeride, and he was a good junior freerider in his day, and the series was a lot less developed then. And pretty much everybody younger than him has come through some form of junior freeride program and competition. So he was the start of it, kind of the catalyst, and now it's just blowing up.
Okay. So the IFSA, is that directly related? Is it related to the Freeride World Tour? Like, are you guys a governing body for those guys or more of a point of reference?
We are, I'd say, partners.
Okay.
So Freeride World Tour operates and oversees competitive freeride in Europe, Oceania, and Asia. So in our whatever verbiage, they're region one. And then IFSA oversees freeride in North and South America. That's region two. So collectively, and it's quite different. We are a not-for-profit governing body. They're a business. So sometimes our discussions are kind of interesting because collectively we're trying to push things in a similar direction. But as the IFSA, our relationship with Freeride World Tour is the best it's ever been right now.
That's great.
The most communication. Yeah, it is great, honestly. Like, it's the most communication, the most sort of cross discussion on sport development than we've ever had before. And it's nice, you know. It's nice to have that, like, I guess, seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, we just operated completely independently of each other, and the only crossover was when our athletes qualified. They went to the Freeride World Tour, and that's kind of where we have a little bit of like a mismatch, not a mismatch, but the top tier, the Freeride World Tour, is them.
Right.
We qualify athletes to that, but we don't manage that or govern that at all. That's entirely their thing. So it's an interesting dynamic. And there's definitely some European, North American sensibility clashes, you know, culture clashes, but it's honestly, it's in a good place right now, which is cool.
Song break.
Rihanna, Umbrella. That's been in my head all day, every day, skiing for like the
expecting.
Last at least the last 3 weeks. That's
hilarious.
Like fully my ski song right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So well, you heard it here first. On. Awesome.
No clouds in my stones. Let it rain, I hide your plane in the bank. Coming down like a Dow Jones. When the clouds come, we gone. We Rockefellers, we fly higher than weather. And she flies are better. You know me, in anticipation for precipitation. Stack chips with a rainy day. Jay, Rain Man is back. With Little Miss Sunshine. Rihanna, where you at?
You have my heart, and we'll never be worlds apart. Maybe in magazines. Still be my star, baby, cause in the dark, you can't see shiny cars, and that's when you need me there, with you I'll always share, because when the sunshine will shine together, told you I'll be here forever, said I'll always be your friend, took an oath. Stand under my umbrella.
Hey Vancouver, for fans of Ocean Alley, Flip Turn, and Still Woozy, alt-rockers Juice are bringing their signature blend of rock, pop, R&B, and hip-hop to the Biltmore Cabaret on February 3rd, with support from Hembree. Tickets are on sale now. Get yours at admitone.com.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19-inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Are you a writer?
Listener?
Dreamer?
Music nerd?
Want to cover artists?
Visit venues?
Write something?
Events?
Personal essays?
Anything!
Submit to Discorder magazine and then take it a step further on Hail Discordia with your hosts, Zoe
and Izzy. Hail Discordia is an audio translation of Discorder magazine. We interview writers, play music and soundscapes, and do a deep dive of each zine issue. Hail Discordia plays at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the third Thursday of every month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Submit something for the magazine and come onto the show, or just tune in and listen. We promise it's worth it.
Welcome back to Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. This is the second half of my interview with Derek Foos, who founded the Whistler Freeride Club, still coaches today, and now is getting more and more involved with the Freeride World Tour, which is the next step for some lucky athletes out there. Stay tuned.
You're also an announcer for the Freeride World Tour. How did you get that invite?
It was so random. I honestly fell almost accidentally into it. The guy who was the events director at Kicking Horse, who I'd known for years on the junior circuit, because we go there every year for their event. He left Kicking Horse and picked up a job with Freeride World Tour as the communications director. And he, in the middle of summer, just sent me a DM. I was like, hey, wondering if you would know of any North Americans who might be good as commentator for Freeride World Tour. And I took a really long time. I threw a bunch of names out. And he was like, no, not that one. And finally, I'll credit my wife for this, because I was just, I don't know, I wasn't seeing it.
Yeah.
She's like, it's you. That's who we were.
That's awesome.
So I reluctantly put my hand up and was like, well, I guess I could do it.
Cause that's great.
I'd been working for Crankworx as a live event announcer here in Whistler for a while.
Okay.
And what I didn't know is that he knew that.
Okay.
And was actively trying to recruit me, but I just didn't get it.
The nuance.
Honestly, he's French Canadian, so maybe there was just something there, some subtlety that I just totally missed. I was like, why didn't you just ask me?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just do this whole fucking rigmarole? Yeah. But anyway, so that was where that came from.
That's sweet.
And they put me on, so there are five events. They put me on the middle three. So Japan was the first one, Verbier is the last one. They used their seasoned guys on those ones, which are, I'd say at the time, probably the bigger, profile events. Mm-hmm. And then I did Kicking Horse, Andorra, and Fieberbrunn in Austria, and it went well.
Great.
It was a crash course in broadcast. I'd only ever done live event announcing, and I had zero idea that it was any different, let alone that it's really different. Totally, learning on the fly with some, you know, some solid chunk of mistakes in the mix. But it worked out well enough. And yeah, so I'm coming into my sixth year with the tour now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. And it's a huge benefit to a lot of other streams of my work life. Like for the Whistler Freeride Club, having me involved in the Freeride World Tour has definitely helped some athletes out, you know, getting access to like forerunning events or just being at events or even the athletes. When visiting tour athletes come to Whistler, these are my friends. So they come and ski with the club.
That's awesome. And oh, wow. That's a great experience for the kids.
Right? And the club kids are like, oh, my God, this is the guy I watch on TV or the girl that I saw win the world championship. Or so they're coming and skiing with the kids and just blowing their minds.
And that's really inspiring.
And then with the IFSA, having me actually working with Freeride World Tour, I have a pretty good inside view on how their operation works. So I think I can kind of help sometimes smooth the rough edges of the communication between the two organizations, because I just have a good working understanding of both sides. So sometimes, you know, little miscues or whatever are just like misunderstandings or lost in translation, because they're a Swiss organization and very francophone. Okay. You know, it's super French.
Yeah.
So sometimes stuff just gets missed. You know, it's not English isn't a first language for them. None of us really speak French.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at a high school level in Canada, but it's not ideal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that part of it's been really cool, because it's just like trickled into a lot of the other stuff that I do.
Okay. So when you're at these competitions and you're announcing and you know all these athletes, do you ever feel a little partial to the kids who've gone through this?
Oh, yeah.
Is that tough?
Yes. There doesn't seem to be, or at least so far, there hasn't been any kind of blowback for the way that I do my job in that sense. It's helped that the kids from the Whistler Freeride Club on the tour have been awesome on the tour. So I'm just calling what I see.
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm like maybe, you know, 90% more excited about it because that was a kid that I coached since they were 12 years old is fine, because excitement is important in announcing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there hasn't been any kind of issue with it.
That's good.
But 100%, like I'm rooting for our kids. Like,
do you ever feel like a little bit more concerned for them when you're watching their lines? Yeah.
It's like, they are the top of the sport. There's risk, like a lot. And I guess similar to when they were juniors, I put a huge amount of faith in their skill and decision-making and their process. So it's like I'm nervous, but there are other athletes on the tour that truly scared me watching, and none of them really were ever ours.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it is, even the ones that I didn't coach, like they're still friends. And so watching them like getting out there, risking life and limb, definitely like, and some of them, the decision-making process has some hitches in it.
Right. Like, are those, do you ever have to kind of suppress inner commentary before announcing?
Like in terms of like, I think that's dumb what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think a big part of the role of a commentator or announcer is to gas these people up, right? Like they use the footage of their runs in their own socials for their sponsors, things like that. So if the commentator's shit talking them, it's not great.
No.
So I avoid that like completely.
At all costs, yeah.
Yeah. And then I just call what I see. So if a poor decision results in a poor outcome, I'm going to say that's what happened. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat that because everyone can see it. So our role is to break it down and actually dissect what happened.
Right.
So as I feel like my skill set as a coach is really applicable to the commentating or announcing, because the whole role of coaching is watching something and then breaking it into digestible feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly what I'm doing with the commentary. I'm watching it, and then I'm saying what I'm seeing, why things are happening the way they're happening. But instead of to an athlete directly, it's just to an audience.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, in a lot of ways, it's the same. You got to be quick on your feet and be able to see it and be accurate, because you'll definitely get called out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Instagram is ruthless for that. Like, if you blow it, you'll know about it in the comments for sure. So I'm gonna call what I see, but I'm definitely not gonna be like down on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll also be honest.
Yeah. So when you're talking earlier, you mentioned like a few missteps in, you know, like learning curve of announcing. Do any moments stick out where you were like, oh, I'm not gonna do that again?
Well, yeah, the very, very first event that I did, they gave us this like printed out spreadsheet that's called a run of show that has like minute by minute the whole thing. And there's like a 15 to 25 minute pre-show before the actual event starts, where we're talking about the location and we're talking about the, you know, where we're at in the series and the standings and all that kind of stuff. And there's a big chunk of it at the start that's like an in-depth introduction to the location. And it really is, it's pretty critical that you do it well. And I had no idea. They're like, here's your run of show. And I was like, what's a run of show? Like, there was zero training going into it. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. We don't get that in live announcing. You hand the mic and the first racer drops, or rider and joyride or whatever.
Yeah.
There's none of that. So we did a rehearsal because they wanted to test the satellite. So we're up, we're on site, we're in the booth on camera, but the event's tomorrow, right? So this is all just, we're going to rehearse the 15-minute pre-show. And our monitor goes live, and it's got like the pictures that are going to be showing in the real pre-show. And I'm just looking at it, basically saying what I see. Like, oh, there's Kicking Horse Mountain. Oh, here's George Rodney. And can we swear here?
Sure.
Okay, so the director comes storming into the booth out of her tent and is like, what the f*** are you guys doing? And I just looked at her and was like, I don't know. Like, I... like zero. I was like, is this not how we do it? And the guy that I was working with, who I put a little bit of this on his lap, because I was like, why didn't you tell me about any of this stuff? Like, no training.
You would expect a little
bit. So I was like, I honestly, because of the Crankworx experience, I went into it, and knowing Freeride as well as I do, I went into it feeling pretty confident,
mm-hmm.
and that just went right out the door. Like,
man.
I was like, I don't know if I actually can do this. So
it's a rude awakening.
Yeah, she yelled at us for a while, like mixing between English and French, and then peaced out, and we went down, and I was like, we have to script this whole thing.
Yeah.
And my co-commentator was like, what are you talking about? And so we sat in our hotel room till like 2 in the morning and wrote it all, like a travel show, you know, like The Lonely Planet.
Yeah.
And when we went live the next day, it was good. And she was like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to sound like. And you have to actually follow the run of show. Like, you got 30 seconds for this intro, and then you have 15 seconds to throw to the next thing. And it's all really structured. And I just didn't know any of that. So it was bad.
That's gnarly.
So I am so grateful that we did that rehearsal, because 100% I would have done that on the live show, and it would have been my only show ever. Like, because it is a ruthless industry in that way. If you blow it, you're just out. There's no second chance. They're just like, no, this, you're not right for it. I'd say I got really lucky. And I did my best when the former guy that I was working with, Neil, left. And we got a new commentator named Anna Smoothie. I was like on the phone with her in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I gave her everything.
Wow.
And then our first show was great. Because she actually
funny
knew
how that goes.
A little bit of training goes a long way. So that was for sure the biggest blunder. And there's been a few where I've just called the wrong thing, because you just can't get it back. There was one in that same event where Craig Murray was on the ridgetop, and he stopped and he was waving his hands around, and I thought he was lost, and then I thought he was like calling attention, but what had actually happened is the boundary rope had come loose and then caught on his pole basket and tied around it. So he was jerking his arm, trying to get it out of the rope. And I was like, oh, Craig's lost. And then he dropped the line of the day. And again, Neil's like, well, I don't think he was lost, Derek. And I was like, Yeah, so that was definitely out of pocket a bit, where I was like, oh, I'm not good at this at all.
That's pretty funny.
So those kinds of things have faded. But I mean,
right,
we're watching on a really small monitor, or you look up and the person's like a dot, yeah, on a huge mountain, like across the valley from you. So sometimes the details are hard to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
But I've since learned that if you don't pick up the details, just zoom out in your words, you know, stay vague. If you're not sure about the details, just don't mention the details instead of just making it up.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's a pretty slim chance that you're right when you're completely inventing it on the spot.
Totally. That's funny. It sounds like, how is this new commentator in this
Anna?
Partner that you have?
Unreal.
Oh, that's unreal. Great.
She's fantastic. Yeah. She was a high level competitor herself. Two times she was one spot below on the qualifying tour than the ones who actually went on to the world tour, which is brutal, but like a clear indication that she's in the sport. She mm-hmm. knows it super well. She's really smart. She's very well spoken. She's funny. She's a Kiwi.
There we go.
So she's got that kind of vibe,
space,
that, a little bit of edge.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great on the show. And we have a really good flow. And I just really like working with her. So
that's
great. Yeah, it's super cool. I hope she never leaves.
Nice. And what's your relationship as an announcer, like, to the rest of the crew, like the judges? We talked a little bit about what it's like with athletes that you know, but athletes that you don't know.
It's good. I mean, I feel like a big part of my role is to spend as much time with the riders as I can, because the more we know about them, the better we can tell their story. It's a family. It's definitely a tight crew, and everybody goes through a lot together. Weather holds and travel and just all the stuff that goes into it. Like, you don't see the behind the scenes when you watch the broadcast, but it's a lot of it is hard. And I'll be honest, it's a lot of it is not that hard for me, but on the team, the people that are setting up the equipment, that are actually building the event site, the ones who are making the weather decisions, we're going to run on this day or not mm-hmm. run on this day, all of those things. Like, there's just so much going on behind the scenes. And I think sometimes that sort of shared, hardship, maybe that's a bit of an overstatement, but, you know,
challenge,
shared challenge is, it really brings people together. So the crew is really close. I'm coming into my sixth year working mm-hmm. with Free Ride World Tour, and I haven't met anybody in all of the cycles of staff and riders mm-hmm. that I just haven't liked.
Luck. I don't know if that's luck or if it's indicative of the culture.
I think it's the second one. Yeah, I think it's that one. I think the culture just attracts, you know, like-minded people that are fun and passionate and they're willing to work hard, but also they're just good people to be around, and we're all working towards the same thing, which kind of helps.
Totally. So when we're speaking about kind of what else you do related to the Freeride World Tour, there's a podcast, is that right?
Yeah.
What does that entail? I know you interview riders about their runs and probably a bit of preseason stuff as well.
Yeah, we're kind of sport analysis, mm-hmm. I would say, is the real focus of it. So giving a bit of a rundown preseason of like who's new, what the wild card situation looks like with athletes that haven't come through mm-hmm. the qualifier pathway, but that have been invited because they're just, you know, status in the industry, basically, like mm-hmm. film riders and pros and stuff. So kind of talking about that, talking through, you know, maybe some predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Predictions are impossible now because the field across all four categories is so stacked. Mm-hmm. Everybody's awesome. Like, there's not one person there that can't win if they have their day.
Wow.
And then once we actually get into the season, we're just chatting about what happened, you mm-hmm. know? And it's fun for me because I was there.
Yeah.
And Mark, my co-host, mm-hmm. is like a true dyed-in-the-wool fan. So between the two of us,
that's awesome.
You know, we've got slightly different experiences of the event, but you know, we're both kind of watching the same thing. I've got a little bit of insight of what happened on site,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he's watching it from the outside with the fan perspective, a lot of the time he'll actually come to the event and watch live.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does he get invited as kind of part of the crew, or does he just kind of invite himself when he can?
I'd say both.
Yeah.
So this year, the Freeride World Tour themselves, like their communications team, has gone a totally different direction with their podcast. So they're doing like these long form interviews, kind of like, I don't know, Dax Shepard, Joe mm-hmm. Rogan's, maybe mm-hmm. not Joe Rogan, well, yeah. but you know what I mean? Like, one-on-one interviews.
No Fall Zone?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I saw that on the
But Mark and I are going to keep the podcast going.
Awesome.
Just not affiliated with the tour. I mean, okay. Obviously we're still affiliated with
the
tour.
Under the name, yeah.
But yeah, it'll be its own thing. And the tour's actually stoked that we're doing it.
Okay.
Because they weren't against what we were doing. They just have a different idea, and they just right now don't have the budget to do two totally separate things mm-hmm. in the podcast space. So yeah, we're going to essentially, we had a decent following, for something that was kind of for both Mark and I, a side project, cause mm-hmm. he runs the low pressure podcast and I'm busy with coaching and announcing. But both of us are still pretty keen on doing it. And the tour is happy to have that like sports analysis kind of show still out there in the world. They're just not running it, so I think we can be a little looser with our banter as well.
Nice.
There's nobody to answer to.
Are you guys still sponsored by Peak Performance?
Yeah, the tour is, and the I'm not 100% sure with the new podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest, that's kind of Mark's world. Yeah. I'm just like rolling in, co-hosting, and rolling back out.
Okay,
he's
cool.
Very much the brains of the operation.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'll do my little bit and talk, and then. So I guess we'll see when the logos go up.
That's awesome. Sounds like you've really been a big part of contributing to the community building around Freeride. Before Whistler Freeride Club was established, did you feel like there was kind of a lack of community in that respect?
There was a really vibrant adult freeride community at the time, which was a big part of my kind of drive to get the club going, because a lot of my friends at that time were like popping off as pro skiers that all of a sudden like, oh, this guy's going to France and this guy's getting budget from Rossignol and all this stuff is happening. And I was really looking for a home in that world mm-hmm. that kind of fit my skill set and what I was willing to do.
Because you were a pre-pro as well.
He's like D grade, I guess.
Come on.
Yeah, no, I had a good little run. Like, I did the Warren Miller movie and mm-hmm. some stuff with like a TGR affiliate and a lot of TV stuff. Working for Extremely Canadian as well was huge with your dad. was a huge part of that. Those guys basically launched me into every every opportunity that I
That's
got
awesome.
Came from Extremely Canadian.
Wow.
The community part of it initially wasn't a huge driving force in like the decisions, but it's been, I'd say, like a really, really cool unintended consequence. And when I started the Whistler Freeride Club, there was Rocky Mountain Freeriders in Banff, and that was it.
Wow.
In North America.
Wow.
And
seriously?
Yeah, they were 99, we were in 01, and there was nothing else.
That's insane.
For the heat, like, for a while, there was no connected competition series. I and my wife and a bunch of friends put on what I'm certain was the first junior freeride comp anywhere ever.
Wow.
On Doom and Gloom on Whistler Mountain.
Nice.
We didn't have permission. We had, we had a panel of judges, Wendy Brookbank from Extremely Canadian, Patty Kay, who was the Rossi rep at the time, and then Les Anthony was the editor of SBC Skier. They were our judges. I had a couple friends on patrol who were just working that day who came down to run safety for us, but weren't, like, none of it was official.
Yeah.
We used banners as outer boundaries and just like yelled at people if they
don't come in.
Yeah, totally. And then a couple years later, Jeff Holden and this guy, legendary guy, Captain Jack, put one on in Red Mountain and he invited us out, but none of it was connected.
Okay.
And then the series, like, as events started to pop up, the series started to just coalesce sort of from there. And then in 2012 the IFSA kind of connected a bunch of the dots
mm-hmm.
and pulled a bunch of these standalone events together into a series, and that was where it really kicked off. And then we've just seen, like I said, explosive growth since then. And every mountain that's got even remotely decent terrain for it has a club now, some big, some small. but it's really cool to see it where it is now. Like I honestly could not have imagined. And there's like an interview with me at that first one where, and I was like, 22 or 23, like, where do you see this going? And I was like, it'd be so cool if there was like other events that we could go to and like see other kids from other mountains. So it's wild to like think back on that and yeah, like, oh, it totally happened. Like,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And and you know, without going too far on it, to me the probably the best part of this is the kids get into it and then they start competing, and they compete in the Western Canadian Series. And they meet kids from Red Mountain and Lake Louise and Kicking Horse, and they start to make those relationships. And then maybe they qualify into NORAMs, or we go down to the U.S., and then they meet the kids from Snowbird and from Palisades and Tahoe and Jackson Hole, and they're like, oh, these kids are sick. And then maybe if they're really talented, they qualify into the Freeride Junior World Championships, and we go off to Europe, and they meet kids from Chamonix and Verbier and Norway and Italy. And by the time they graduate, they've got friends in all the best places to ski in the world, and they're all like that. They're so tight. You know, they're, because they have the same kind of thing as I talked about with the tour. They have that shared experience, you know, shared risk, shared fun, all of it. It's kind of bonding. So this like expanding circle of friends is just such a great part of it. The community grows, you know, out and out and out. And for these Canadian kids to have friends that are from France and Switzerland and Sweden, and it's so
extremely
cool.
Unique.
Yeah, it's really good, and you know, those friendships and relationships last for life, which is, I think, is probably maybe my favorite part of all of it.
That's fantastic. I think you're the right man for the job. Really sounds like it.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I keep just like lucking into these things, but it's
I don't know if it's luck. Good. If it's consistent, I don't know if it's luck. I think.
Well, thank you, Jim. Yeah. That's nice of you to say.
Oh, yeah. And you've got a family now.
Yep.
Yeah.
My wife Yolanda, two kids. Yeah, Hugo, my youngest, is 10, and my older son Mason is 14. Both of them are in the Freeride Club.
Awesome.
Mason's like all in on the competition stuff. He's loving it, and it's been actually quite cool to see his motivation change and grow. You know, from being younger, he got into high school, and then he started going to the gym every morning. He's like, I want to be able to stomp bigger cliffs, and the like, I don't know, health and wellness part of it. That's just, you know, you get stronger, you're more confident, not just in skiing, but just as a person. It feels good to feel good physically, and so that's been a cool part as a parent to see my own kid go through what I've been taking so many other people's kids through. And it's just given me like an even bigger appreciation for the coaching crew that we've got in the Whistler Club. Like,
that's awesome.
I love the coaches that work for the Whistler Freeride Club. Like, it's just such a great crew. And all of them have that exact same shared passion. And we don't set groups for the season. So every day, you know, they're set within the age group. So we've got a group of U15 coaches, a group of U19 coaches, and then U12 coaches. But there'll be a different coach with the group of kids each day, and the kids will cycle around too. So, you know, a day with me might be different than a day with somebody else, but they're both going to be good, but in quite different ways. So I think there's just a huge value in that for these
big
kids
time.
To get all these different experiences from all these different adults that are all guiding them towards kind of the same thing, but in really different ways.
So we're coming up on the hour here, and yeah, this will be coming up right before the World Tour starts, I think less than 10 days before, so.
So exciting.
Yeah, good luck this season.
Yeah, thanks, Jade. Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
All right.